Let's see if we can get a bit of a handle on this burnout. First, a statement from the psychologist Herbert Freudenberger, who actually claims credit for making the term burnout popular. He identifies burnout as a depletion of energy and a feeling of being overwhelmed by other problems. Now, as we go through this tonight, we're going to be asking ourselves some questions. How do I rate along the symptoms of burnout? Do many of you feel tired? Christina Maslach, a psychologist, says burnout is a syndrome of emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and reduced personal accomplishment that can occur among individuals who do people work of some kind. And this seems to be one of the reoccurring factors in the issue of stress burnout, is that it's people helper people who seem to be more prone to it. And I would suggest that there are some wrong goals that have been established and we have expectations of people who are not producing them. Burnout victims display similar factors, physical and emotional exhaustion. That seems to come through. Victims find it very difficult to face the future. It's all too much. It's overcome them and stop. And then they seem to detach themselves from personal closeness. Folk find it very hard to get alongside them. You try and encourage them and they don't even want to hear. And you see that taking place. They feel that they're drained emotionally and as a result they suffer spiritually. People who are really on fire for the Lord are sitting down so passively, so tiredly, and they don't do much. One of the most common definitions of burnout describes it as a loss of enthusiasm, energy, idealism, perspective and purpose. The person loses that, I'll repeat it. A loss of enthusiasm, energy, idealism, perspective and purpose. Something goes wrong and all that, which was before the person now seems to have finished. They don't have the energy to complete it. It can be viewed as a state of mental, physical and spiritual exhaustion brought on by continued stress. So we have the stress leading on to burnout, leading on to depression. And if it is not halted, if it is not slowed down, if it's not turned around, that's the direction it will finish up heading. And the person will suffer the effects of it. Let's just discuss stress for a moment. Dr. Hans Selye, one of the most widely recognised authorities on stress, defines stress as our body's response to any demand made upon it. We all experience stress at different times. Stress is actually normal for us. But it's when it's in excessive doses that we begin to act in ways which aren't good for us. The body certainly shows it. He defines two areas, or he divides stress up into two areas or two types, and I think we've got a spot to put it there. The first is distress. That's the first stress that you've got to be aware of. Distress, excessive levels of continued damaging stress. We can cope with a certain amount of stress. Stress is good for us in some ways. It helps us to achieve. But too much in a continuing sense will be damaging. The second is what he calls eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, eustress, which is a good positive kind of stress that one feels at a time of happiness, fulfillment or satisfaction. And there are times, and I don't know if you can identify that, things are really going well, you've been running high and there is a degree of stress and it keeps you going. The old adrenaline is really going there. And that's another form. Stress is necessary for us in smaller amounts. It's normal, if not necessary, for everyday living. So just to feel a little stress, don't give up at that stage. We learn through it and we grow through it. But it's the large type, continued chronic doses of stress that can debilitate us as people. We have to identify when we are under it because we'll be affected mentally, physically and spiritually. And I meet people under stress. I think times I could even identify it myself. Hey, the pressure is on. And I know when one is preparing to go away for a week and then you come into another situation like this, you gear up for one thing and then you've got to gear up for another. It puts a certain amount of stress on you. The material I prepared for this was over 2 weeks ago, and I've been working on other material over there and haven't had a chance to look at this. And so you come and you've got to try and recall and put into place all the work that you've done on this. That's stress. I don't think I'm stressed out at this point, but watch, you might use me and see what happens. By the time tomorrow's here, you'll say, man, he knew what he was on about. Look at him. But let's identify, and this is what is critical, that we first of all can be in touch with our own feelings. We must be in touch with our own emotions. We need to know how we are functioning. Let's be alert to that. If we are not alert to how we are feeling, we are not going to function as good as we could, and we're not going to be in a position to help others. Too much stress over too long a time can result in burnout. And burnout, if not addressed, will lead to clinical depression, a very serious one indeed. Now, we need to learn certain skills. We need to learn coping skills. There are good coping skills and there are poor coping skills. We need to avoid the poor ones. Let's have a look at some of the symptoms that can appear from this stress burnout issue. Some physical symptoms. See how you go. Headaches, migraine, neck aches, back aches, insomnia, ulcers, digestive problems, loss of appetite, heart attack and strokes. Got them all? There you are. Now that's okay on the first lot, right. A lot of those things are common. You wouldn't want to have too many strokes and heart attacks, I know that. But apart from those very serious issues, there are many of these other things are common. But it's when we start putting other factors together. Some of the emotional symptoms, feeling of failure or feelings of disillusionment, increased irritability, anger towards yourself, not being able to function at the level that you once used to. Often people get angry because they had a very high level of performance and all of a sudden they're slowing down, and it seems to produce cynicism in a person, negativism and depression. You see that happening. And the spiritual symptoms that come through, some are similar here. Feelings of disillusionment that people have. You see that they feel that people have given up on them. They feel that God has given up on them. There's an extreme anxiety again of trying to prove oneself in a performance level, wanting to demonstrate that they're worthy in the way that they serve God, that they're worthy in the way that they serve people. We are doing it right. And they feel themselves are the ones who have only got the power to overcome the situation. They're the only ones who can help themselves. No one else can really help. They're some of the symptoms. And you do see people demonstrate them. Even when I was in New Zealand, I spoke to some people in ministry who have been going through burnout. For one man, it's been going on over 2 years. And it's sad to see the fellow because he's a lovely guy. He recognises now where he's been. And now he's just beginning, I think, to turn the corner. And it was fascinating that some of the material I was working on was a very clear description of where he was and what he was trying to do. I was able to help him readjust what his goals were in getting back to where he wanted to be. Look at Solomon's experience here. Listen to what he wrote here in Ecclesiastes 2, 17 through 23. Let's see what it was he was feeling. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things that I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the things into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labour under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge and skill, and then he must leave it and leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labours under the sun? All his days his work is pain and grief. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. Did you catch some of the words he used, some of the phrases there? This anxious striving with which he labours under the sun. This degree of anxiety that comes as one is pushing and driving and striving. And some of the most enthusiastic, energetic men in God's service have folded because they went to excesses. And I don't think God wants that to happen to us. I'm not even discussing the issue of sincerity. Undoubtedly, these people are just so sincere. And yet, they have burned out. Look at the Martha syndrome as recorded in Luke chapter 10. It's an interesting one. Verse 38, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Well now, what a dilemma. Can you see the situation with poor Martha? All this work to do. Now, the work had to be done. Was there anything wrong with the work that she wanted to do? No, it was quite acceptable. Where was the problem? Attitudinal. See, she has an attitudinal problem, and what you believe is going to determine how you behave. Jesus was telling Martha that because of her anxiety over her work, she was literally tying herself up in knots. Geldenhuis refers to this as an agitated state of mind. That's what she was in. An agitated, she was unsettled and there was things to be done. And she was panicking and there was no pleasure in it. It's a syndrome. We see this happening. And it's not only ladies that suffer from that. So much. Who's going to help me? What can I do? And instead of settling down and adjusting our approach to it, you run with it and you burn out. You see, her priorities were wrong at that stage. Anyone can be a potential target for burnout. Anyone can be. And they tell us that professionals rate possibly the highest in the whole area there. It says that anyone who tends to be energetic, highly motivated, dedicated, devoted, enthusiastic, better educated, committed, responsible, they're the ones who are more likely to suffer from burnout. Yes, people with tremendous drive can be the ones who can do that. Now, why is this? Two reasons are given. Partially because they are idealistic, and secondly, they are those who are perfectionists. That's what they want. And they've got high expectations of themselves and high expectations of others. People with a high degree of what we call self-discipline. And they really work hard themselves, but they expect others to be the same. They assume everyone else should function the way they do. And the frustration comes in and others don't perform, so they try and make up and do it themselves. Having performed above the average at certain times, they themselves and others too expect them to maintain that level. You know how you can really set a sort of a short-term goal and say, man, I'm going to go out after it. I see people like this in business sometimes. Folk will buy what we call a corner store. You know those little general stores, open 7 days a week from 7 in the morning till 11 at night. They get in there and they run it. A lot of money to be made in the food industry like that. But the wise ones will say, we will lock into this for 12 months, 2 years. They'll put a limit on it. And they will survive because it's short term. But if they try and keep it open and an open-ended time, guess what happens? They don't make any more than 18 months. Because it's just all consuming. And this happens in a range of ways. To expect somebody to take off to a high level and maintain it continually is asking or expecting somebody who's running a 100-metre sprint to maintain that in a marathon race. You can't do it. You can do it for a short term, and then that's it. Let's just run a quick little inventory. and we'll see how we come up. Very quick on this one. Okay, a burnout inventory. Down. There we go. Thank you for that. Are you able to read that there? Good on you. Okay. Check some of these statements, you see. If you believe that you are really tired and are getting headaches and neck aches and all of the rest of it, and you think you might be heading toward a burnout, check these symptoms. See which ones you agree with. More and more I find that I can hardly wait for quitting time to come so that I can leave work. We won't ask for a show of hands on that one. I feel like I'm not doing any good at work these days. I am more irritable than I used to be. I'm thinking more about changing jobs. And we're saying down our way, no longer do people even contemplate job satisfaction. They just worry about having a job. Lately, I've become more cynical and negative. I have more headaches or backaches or other physical symptoms than usual. Often I feel hopeless, like who cares. I drink now more or take tranquilizers just to cope with everyday stress. My energy level is not what it used to be. I'm tired all the time. I feel a lot of pressure and responsibility at work these days. This is going to floor you. My memory is not as good as it used to be. I don't seem to concentrate or pay attention like I did in the past. I don't sleep as well. My appetite is decreased these days, so I can't seem to stop eating. Now, if it hadn't been the first statement, I would have said a lot of you guys are right. But then you read the second, I say, boy, you're still fucking. I feel unfulfilled and disillusioned. I am not as enthusiastic about work as I was a year or two ago. I feel like a failure at work. All the work I've done hasn't been worth it. I can't seem to make decisions as easily as I once did. I find I'm doing fewer things at work that I like or that I do well. I often tell myself, why bother? It really doesn't matter anyhow. I don't feel adequately rewarded or noticed for all the work I've done. I feel helpless, as if I can't see any way out of my problem. People have told me I'm too idealistic about my job. I think my career is just about to come to a dead end. Well, it says, count your marks. You would have checked on those. If you agree with the majority of those statements, then you may be feeling burnout. And you may be in need of some professional help or counselling, or at least a change in lifestyle. Now, a lot of those things are fairly commonplace, but when you start putting them all together, that's when you start running into a dangerous position. We need to be wise. Is it possible that in leadership, in the church, in eldership, you could be burning out? Well, if that's the case, take stock and say, hey, I need to check out what it's all about. I've obviously got some things out of kilter here. I need to check what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. I need to check my motivation. I need to check my goals. Unrealistic expectations that are unfulfilled are a real catalyst for burnout. And so often we set unrealistic expectations. And the suggestion is that you lower your expectations to more realistic ones. There's a number of little diagnostic tools. And if we have unreachable goals, it will lead us into depression. If we have goals that are blocked, we'll develop anger. And if we've got uncertain goals, we'll experience anxiety. And I see people functioning with these. Some people say, okay, I'll lower my goals. In fact, I won't even worry about my goals. I'll give them all away. Well, that's a sure sign that you probably are burned out. So the extremes aren't any good there. Now, you say, wait a minute, lowering goals, lowering expectations, shouldn't we as Christians have high expectations? Of course we should. No worry about that. Let me read to you from Isaiah 55, 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. God is saying, oh, I can do things in a great different way to what you can. I believe as Christians we should expect God to do great things. I believe we should expect him to do even miraculous things, but he will do them in his ways, not our ways. And that's the trap. We try and do it in our own way, in our own strength, and we have to check just how we are doing it. Let's go to one of the guys who's used tremendously in some of these areas, and you probably are tired of looking at the guy in this, but it's Elijah. And doesn't Elijah come in for a hammering? But let's learn from him again from perhaps another perspective. 1 Kings, and we're looking at chapters 17 through 19. Elijah, of course, has had this incredible victory over the prophets of Baal. He races off, and this is his situation. He has his subsequent flight into the wilderness, and then he exhibits characteristic symptoms of stress, burnout, and depression. Let's have a look at his exploits. They were very dark days in the land. Often we, as we were looking at it this morning, or was it last night, everybody wanted to do what was right in his own eyes. And we find that as Elijah ministered, as he prophesied, his utterances were absolutely powerful. He was a man of God. He was a man who was feared as being a man of God. His ministry was so well substantiated by miracles that people respected him. 450 prophets of Baal gathered together under his direction, and they're up on the mountaintop, and it's a real battle scene that's being set, and he defeats them. He prays for fire to come down from heaven, it does. And he prays for rain to come, and it does. They say, man, a servant like that, a man of God like that, would never experience burnout, would he? Hey, with a man, you know, with such power and drive. Remember what James 5:17 records? Elijah was a man just like us. Never forget that. God's servants are men just like us. Herbert Freudenberger, who I quoted before, observes that burnout is the letdown that comes in between crises directly after the mission accomplished. A person can be working so hard and so intense, and that which was before them has been achieved. And then it can happen. That's the letdown. And look at Elijah here. He's been successful. He is indeed what we would call a high achiever. He extended incredibly high amounts of physical energy, of emotional energy, and of spiritual energy. He was seen to be using all of these. And you just check the conflict that he had with the prophets of Baal and see what he was up against. Boy, did he get into it. It was really a high flyer indeed. The results of the success of his work caused the king and the rest of the Israelites to recommence their worship of the one true God. So it was impactive. That was successful. He then climbed up to the top of Mount Carmel. And I've been up to the top of Mount Carmel. And it's no small, shallow little mountain. It's quite a steep climb there. I was driven up, didn't climb it. And boy, I thought, fancy running up there, particularly if it was from the ocean side. It's a very steep pinch coming up there. So he races up the top of Mount Carmel and he gets involved in intense prayer for rain. And that was to end the drought of 3 years. So he had to be a man of faith, didn't he? Boy, what a test. Now, after the prayer is answered, he then runs 30 kilometres from Carmel to Jezreel. How's your jogging going these days? He runs that distance. And then after that, a very amazingly successful crusade, he receives a shock. He really does. It's unexpected. And he gets a comment that comes from Jezebel, and she vows to kill him. Here's the guy who's been successful, this powerful one who's defeated, been used by God to defeat these prophets of Baal. And Jezebel says, I'm going to nail your hide to the wall. You are a dead man. He didn't expect that, and he reacts to it. There's a complete turnaround right now, and he experiences rejection. This is his interpretation of it. He experiences threats, and his joy is now replaced with fear. Mental attitude, he changes. He now runs, only this time he's running for survival. This time he is running for his life and the table seemed to be turned in his own experience. You ask, why would a man like Elijah do that? After facing all of those prophets of Baal, why in the world would he turn and run because of a death threat? Do you think they threatened his life at all? I'm sure they must have. I'm sure in many times it was a life and death situation. But he gets this one threat and off he goes. Why didn't he stop and pray like he did when he prayed for rain? It's funny, isn't it? A change. What got into him? You know, he had been on an emotional and a physical high. And you've got to watch this. He was way up there. He'd been caught off guard, both emotionally and spiritually. Whee, everything's come together. What a great time. Hallelujah. It's all going well. And the defences were down. He had the adrenaline still flowing through his body. And he was depending on the physical strength that he had enjoyed. It was a physical strength that he was reacting to. Instead of waiting on God, he now depends on himself. Instead of praying, he runs. And that physical energy that he had earlier, he was depending on it. He ran from Jezreel to Beersheba for his life. So he continued to run. And the further he runs, the more depressed he becomes. Because is it possible now that he starts to expend all that energy, that physical energy? He becomes more and more burned out physically. Spiritually, his confidence and his strength had moved from God to what little physical energy he had. And he starts to slow down, and the problem is compounded. He is now, as I said earlier, trying to do it in his own strength. And that's a trap. You can experience blessing in God's work. You can experience blessing in ministry and leadership. God has touched the life of the church, the life of the people. We say, isn't this fantastic? And then we want to keep it going in our own strength. And we fail to be relying on God. And that's when we start to run down. See what happens. See how he compounds this problem now. He now isolates himself. He now withdraws from people. He even leaves his servant behind and he withdraws into the wilderness alone. And you'll find people who are suffering from burnout and stress and depression. They don't want to talk to people. And what a trap that is. Because if there was ever a time that somebody needs to be encouraged and needs to know friendship, it's when you're in a situation like that. But he's got no one to help him, no one to draw alongside, no one to be near him. And so his feelings decrease or increase, whichever way you want to use it there. He experiences the feeling of despair and the feelings of self-pity come over. And that happens. Let's check his emotions. We're in 1 Kings 19, verses 3 to 4. Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the desert. He came to a broom tree, sat down under it and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I'm no better than my ancestors. He was afraid. He sat down and he prayed to die. Lord, take me home. Can you see how isolated and detached he felt? He was really down. He focused his thinking on himself. Notice that. He started to look inwardly here. He was obsessed perhaps with a desire to even be more successful than his ancestors. You pick that up. Look, I am no better than my ancestors. I wanted to be better than them, but I'm no better than them. His self-centered thinking continued for 40-odd days. And it continued even after God started to work with him and supply him rest and food and insight. And you see this in verses 9 through 10. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him. What are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. And I am the only one left, and they are trying to kill me too. Let's note his burnout symptoms. Just check them through. There's five of them here. He was experiencing feelings of resentment and bitterness. Resentment and bitterness. He resented the fact that others had abandoned God. That's how he saw it. They've all turned away from you, Lord. Secondly, he had feelings of self-pity. feelings of self-pity, when you read it through, I, he's centering on himself. It's a real I emphasis. Third, there was egotism. The feeling of being indispensable. You see, I am the only one left. But notice the evaluation. That's what he felt. That's what he thought. No one else. I'm the only one left. There were feelings of paranoia. They're trying to kill me. One death threat becomes a national vendetta. You see? They're all trying to kill me, but who said? Jezebel. But now he's turned it into everybody. And finally here, he had resentments, feelings of resentment and anger against God. And God did not need to be reminded of how zealous Elijah had been for his name. You see? Don't you know what I've done? And he's going off like this. You know, he's asking God to take his life. They're trying to kill me. God, you kill me. They're trying to kill me. It indicates that he's really lacking now in trusting God, in saying, God, you are in control. You are sovereign. You're the one who can protect me. But Lord, kill me. Others are trying to kill me. He lost that trust in the sovereign God. Now, God gives a remedy for burnout. And I hope there's enough room on your page to put some of this in. Let's have a look at God's remedy for burnout. The first thing that we notice that God did was he met Elijah's physical needs. And that's in 1 Kings 19:5 through 6. Somebody's experiencing the symptoms of burnout or even burnout itself. They're going to need rest. And they're going to need nourishment. They need to be cared for physically. Secondly, he let Elijah see that he was still in control of circumstances and was still active in Elijah's life. He let Elijah see that he was still functioning, still there, still in control. God communicated in a passage demonstrating his continued concern for Elijah. And you see this in verses 9 through 17. You see God communicating with him, interested in him, giving him directions. For example, what are you doing here, Elijah, in verse 9? In verse 11, the Lord said, go out and stand in the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by you. I haven't let you alone, Elijah. And then in verse 13, then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? In verse 15, the Lord said to him, go back the way you came. God was still in touch. God was still ministering to him. God had not left him. Tell me, when does God leave us? Never. But how often we feel that happens? You know, when things aren't going right, when we're struggling, where's God in all of this? God says, I'm still with you. It's just that you're not conscious of me. You're not looking for me. And it's very easy to be depressed like that. Thirdly, we see that God stimulated Elijah to express his intense feelings. So many people will not identify their feelings. We must identify how we are. And once we identify the feelings, then we can do something about them. Feelings are very real. They're dangerous to make decisions on. Don't make decisions on feelings, you'll get into trouble. But feelings will indicate how we're functioning. And if we can see how we're feeling, then we can deal with them. If they're negative feelings, we can get rid of them. We don't bury them, we resolve them, identify them, acknowledge, yes, this is happening. Now I will resolve them. Sometimes it takes a bit of time. But to ignore them, to bury them, is not healthy at all. And you see in verses 4 and 10 and 14, Elijah being encouraged by God to begin to express how he is feeling. The fourth point in this is after feelings and frustration were exposed, God gave Elijah some new tasks to perform. See, he's feeling useless, he's no good, he's lost. But God says, hey Elijah, I've got some work for you to do. Now remember what work he'd been doing? Remember the great prophet, he'd been out there, he'd been facing the enemy, he'd been used to defeat all the prophets of Baal, he did this and he did that. Now what has the Lord given him to do? He gave him three tasks. I want you to anoint two kings and one prophet. Okay, the tasks were achievable. The tasks were not heavy. They were light tasks, easily accomplished. Why would God just give him something simple like that to do and not some major issue? He wouldn't believe that he would be able to accomplish the big ones. But by doing something small, well, I did it. And something small, I did it. Something small, I did it. I've succeeded. Even though one has been so successful in the past, he needed the encouragement of achievement now. And the people that I have talked to who have gone through the burnout problems are exactly in the same. They've lost all confidence. Guys who are so capable. He's saying, hey, how about you do this? I couldn't face that. And I recognised that I was asking too much of them. And a fellow I spoke to only recently wanted to get back into doing things. And he said, I just got to get back into my time with God. I'm going to set aside a whole hour to do this, and I'm going to do that for another 3 hours. I said, why don't you start off with saying, Lord, I'm going to set aside 5 minutes to read your word today. 5 minutes? I said, just start with 5 minutes. And do that for a few days. And then if you feel you can extend it to 10 minutes, then go to 10 minutes. But don't start with an hour to begin with. Because what would happen? He would have crashed again. You see? And it took me about 3 days to convince him to just start with little bites. And it does work. To rush back into work that involves major stress will only bring it all back again. You've got to become stronger and stronger, and it takes time. And the fifth point is this, that God provided a genuine friend. He needed a friend. He needed somebody who could be alongside him. Who was that friend? Elisha. He's got somebody now, a companion. And we read in 19 of 1 Kings, at about verse 21, that Elisha set out to follow Elijah and become his attendant. Now he had a friend again, and we find that he was helped. Remember, men, Elijah was a man just like us. He dropped his spiritual guard at a point of stress, at a point of victory. He dropped his guard. He wasn't ready for the subtlety of the pressures that came upon him. And as a result, he went down and he was almost out. We will all face stress. We have all got different coping levels. Don't attempt to be like somebody else. If they can do it, I can do it. That's a dangerous proposition. It really is. You've got to function at the level that you can. Does God expect you to be like somebody else? No. God expects you to do what he's gifted you to do. Learn to serve in your area of gift. Service by gift, not by guilt. And too many people function that way. They do things because they feel guilty about it. No one else is going to do it, so I'll do it. Never serve that way. John 15:5, the Lord Jesus saying, I am the vine and you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. And the moment we stop trusting in the Lord, depending on him, and trying to run in our own strength at our own pace, that's when we begin to fold. We will all, I trust, experience great victories for God. But remember, it is him working in us and not us doing it ourselves. So I will quote again from 1 Peter 1:13. I would like you to lock it into your thinking. It says, therefore, prepare your minds for action. Be self-controlled. Realize that stress and pressure are part of the warfare. Be prepared for it. Be self-controlled. Realize your limitations. Identify when you are really under pressure. If the pressure is being sustained, say, okay, it's time out. Time out. So often we don't. Christian workers don't. And I'm not proud of this, but I went 7 years in our first 7 years of ministry without a holiday. It was crazy. but we just didn't set it aside. Nobody said, hey, you need to have a holiday, you need to have a break. Of course, it was all the camps we did, they were our holidays. You know, you had a great rest in running camps, no worry about that. But that was stupidity, and I'm not boasting about it. It was silly. And I've said to folk over the years, slot in your times for your holidays. I haven't spoken to campsite here this time, but every time I'm on a campsite, I get talking to workers, when are you having a break? Check them out, push them and that. Last year, you know how much holiday I took? None. I ran out of time for holidays. I had 2 weeks, this just after Christmas, that was part of last year's holiday. But you see, knowing it and doing it are two different things. And it's crazy. So the time I had set aside, I burned up. I see a hand. Would you please come forward? No. It certainly is. Yes.
Seeing someone heading down that track that you see cows and go and help, what is the next course?
Well, that's the thing that we've got to be looking for. Now, okay, Elijah was a senior man, and certainly the days of his ministry must have sort of been running out. But it can be, the principle can be, that how many folk who go right through burnout completely really get back on top again? Unless there is the right care and encouragement, and it's done wisely, they will struggle. It is possible. It really is possible. And that's what we must take hope in. But if they're not looked after, and if they're not encouraged and coached gently, they may not get back to where they were. And we have to watch that. So the big thing now is watching carefully and seeking to avoid burnout. Now what happens? What do we do when we see somebody who's not going to pay attention? What are we going to do about it? It depends who they are and it depends your contact with them. And I think we've got to get alongside those who have some degree of responsibility, someone who they are accountable to. And I would suggest to you that the issue of accountability is critical, particularly in the area of ministry. Who are the elders accountable to? Primarily, they are accountable to the Lord himself. Okay. But should there be set up some peer group accountability? Of course there should be. Elders should be accountable to one another. And you, as a group of men, as elders, should be friends. If you are not friends in eldership, heaven help the fellowship. Okay? You should be friends, you should be working together to be friends, to love each other, to be one together, to be united together. And if a group of godly friends can't identify when one brother is not functioning as he used to, and if they can't get alongside him and slow him down, literally slow him down, they're not very effective in their position. It will take effort and it won't be easy. But if there is that accountability acknowledgement, yes, we are accountable to one another and we will accept the advice and the direction from one another, then it will happen. But if it's not a set up, you can have people just do their own thing and they're away. So that's what we have to try and do there, David. Establish that. If somebody is in Christian ministry and they have no one they're accountable to, again, they're going to be in trouble. I see some people like that run totally independent. You know, some people said, I've got my board, but they don't even meet with the board. It's only in name only. Accountability is critical because it's protection. It's protection in so many ways. This is a real issue, and we are all capable of hitting that wall. I hope we never do. I hope there are people alongside us who can slow us down.